guess we can change gears here and move over to some heavier elements. Earlier this year, actually only a few months ago, we started a project funded by CERTIP to investigate the adsorption or retention characteristics of antimony. And CERTIP, of course, is a federal agency that is a cooperative funding source from various government agencies, as you can see on the bottom of the slide there. And their specific purpose relative to antimony was, as I'll get into later in the talk, that it is a problematic element in some of their some of the governments or the armed forces sites for reclamation. The study involves numerous soil surfaces. It just so happens that the luck of the draw, Gibbsite came out to be the first one we started investigating. And this really isn't preliminary data. This is actually data we've been producing in the lab for the past couple of months. In addition to myself, the other principal investigator on the project is Melanie Stewart. Melanie complained to me that she wanted to know why I was giving the presentation and not her, and the reason is because she's back in her room with a hangover from last night. So it's fortuitous then that she can't hold her liquor like I can, but she needs to learn that mixing is not a good idea. So with that introduction, of course, she's not here to scold me. We'll go ahead and continue here. Antimony, like arsenic, in fact, antimony being right below arsenic on the periodic table, is a toxin. There's no known biological function associated with this particular element. And the reason we're interested in it, from CERTIP's perspective, it is a co-contaminant with lead in shooting range soils. And obviously these bullet fragments, whether they're releasing the lead to the soil environment, but also the antimony. And there's very little understanding about the way antimony reacts in soil systems. It's not like some of the more poster child elements like lead or like arsenic. There's virtually nothing available in the literature that relates anything about its reactions in soil systems. So if you're trying to mitigate the effects of this particular element on biological systems, we need to understand some of the processes and reactions that distribute this material or this element between the various phases in soils, but also how accessible or bioaccessible these phases are to living organisms. So just a brief background on what we really kind of know about antimony in soil systems is probably most of you know, like most other trace elements, it is a trace element, meaning it's got very low concentrations in soil systems. Uncontaminated soils, a median value is usually reported to be about 1 part per million. In lead bullets, it's approximately ranges between 2 and 5%, and it's there as a hardener, a stabilizer of the lead, along with some other elements like arsenic and a few other really, really trace elements are there as well. In shooting range soils, but in primarily these numbers are for civilian shooting range soils. I don't think the Army or any of the other armed forces really publish what they know about their contaminated sites. So in general, antimony concentrations in civilian shooting range soils can be quite high and range over several orders of magnitude, all of which are quite a bit higher than the 1 part per million in uncontaminated soils. Arsenic on the brain thanks to 7 talks this morning about it. Antimony is a metalloid and exists in several oxidation states. Obviously in lead bullets it's 0, but in natural environments it can be 3 or 5. And as you can see from the this distribution diagram here, in aerobic systems, and when you have iron 3 and manganese 4 around, essentially you're going to have antimony 5. Antimony 5 is a weak acid. It hydrolyzes very low pH, is around 2.8 or so. Yeah, 2.85 actually. And so typically in soil systems that are oxic and suboxic in solutions, it's going to be a monovalent anion. And of course, that is going to kind of obviously dictate some of its behavior there because of its anionic nature. again, as I said, it's a toxin. And as you would expect, being an element, it has several pathways that it's going to be involved with in soil systems. The one that CERTIP is mainly concerned with is the pathway here where you have children here directly ingesting soil particles from contaminated or thought to be, you know, mitigated systems. And this is the primary pathway they're interested in relative to abating the effects of this substance on biological systems. And of course, in some of these environments, we have come to know that if we fertilize, for instance, with phosphates, we can stabilize the lead produced through the weathering of bullets by forming the lead phosphate, very stable lead phosphate minerals that maintain their stability in the guts of organisms. And the question is well, if we treat a system for lead stabilization, is this going to provide the same type of stabilization for antimony, or are we going to exacerbate the problem relative to this particular toxin and actually make it more bioavailable and more mobile in soil systems? So that's one of the concerns we have in this study, is can we, through examining the adsorption behavior, you know, what specifically are the mechanisms, and are those mechanisms things that we can predict, and are those mechanisms leading to something that is stable? Now, this is stuff kind of gleaned from the literature. If we start with antimony and zero valence, we have several oxidation steps that can occur. People have shown that antimony 3 here, when added to soil systems, doesn't exist for very long, typically only sticks around for a matter of days, and rapidly turns into antimony 6. So we've essentially restricted our adsorption studies to the five valency state. And of course, that in soil systems, that has been shown to primarily associate with iron oxides, but aluminum oxides are also a viable source for complexation. And as I've indicated here, there's possibly different types of mechanisms that can occur, anion exchange versus ligand exchange, for instance. And then, of course, if you're adding phosphate to stabilize lead, there's the very large potential that you're going to displace that antimony, irrespective of the mechanism, into the soil solution. And that's been shown by Spuler and others. So the technical objectives of the overall project is really to gain a real thorough understanding of adsorption behavior of antimony. And I've italicized gibbsite because that's what we started with, and that's what I have some data to view today. We started out looking at adsorption edge studies, and of course these are adsorption as a function of pH. We're not doing batch studies here. We're kind of doing a reactor type of system where we have about a 2-liter, I call it a reaction vessel, but all it is a water jacketed beaker where we control the temperature. We start out with a large volume at a very high pH with a fixed solid solution ratio and a known amount of antimony added to the system. And we're conducting these studies under two different ionic strength conditions and under nitrogen in a glove box. I've done considerable studies relative to adsorption characteristics of substances, and we find that carbonates really play havoc with what we try to do. So we've gone to great lengths to make sure we don't have those in the system. But essentially what we start with is a system at high pH, and then that's equilibrated for a certain period of time, which we've already investigated as to how long we know that is. And then the system is sampled, and then the pH is modified with the addition of an acid, and then it's equilibrated for another certain period of time. And then that stepping goes on until we get to about pH 3. And then we start a desorption step, or desorption edge, where now, rather than adding acid to get to pH 3, we're adding a base, get back up to pH 10. And at each step, we're sampling the system, separating solid solution, and analyzing by really the only thing we have available to us is the ICP atomic spectroscopy. Detection limit's about 0.1 micromole per liter, which translates to about 0.01 part per million. And then just simply, as you're all probably used to doing, is just doing a mass balance. What's, you know, what disappears, what is what goes on the solid phases. And we start out as, oops, wow, one button goes backwards and one button goes forward. So that's pretty cool. All right, so we start out at high pH, and again, different ionic strength systems. They're done in potassium nitrate because the only salt we can get is the already?
3 minutes.
My gosh. Okay, well, the only salt we can get is the potassium salt, and we see here there's definitely a difference between the ionic strength systems. Just as a comparison, I threw in some sulfate adsorption data here to show that, you know, really we're not getting antimony adsorbed to any greater degree than we did sulfate on the on this similar system. Phosphate adsorption in these systems would be way up here around 10 millimoles per kilogram. So it's very, really kind of quite low adsorption. And of course, if you, the backward reaction is hysteretic, to say the least. We start out here, and even at the low pH system, these are 2 hours between each point. We're just not seeming to get it off here, and as we increase pH, we start to see a curve that kind of mimics the adsorption curve, and it's the same for both. Well, we thought maybe we're not reaching an equilibrium, and so we thought let's let this go a little longer. And of course, when you have graduate students that, you know, you can tell them to be in the lab at midnight to sample, that's what we did, what I did. So I made them do the 8 hours between each point, and really the data is no different. In fact, these last points here, Melanie let these sit actually for a couple of days, and the data were the same. So it's just not coming off. But you can see that there is after you get past a certain pH here, things start to be removed, which kind of suggests that perhaps you have up here something of a specific character to the adsorption mechanism, whereas down here is something more of an anion exchange type mechanism. So in summary, again, the retention increases with decreasing pH and decreasing ionic strength, which kind of suggests a certain type of mechanism there. Adsorption is similar to sulfate. Desorption of is hysteretic, and we can't seem to get it back off. And the data right now tend to suggest that we have two different types of mechanisms operating depending upon the pH of the system.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If somebody has one very, very quick question.
Yeah, in fact, temperature is very important, and that's one of the variables in our study. In fact, we did, the last study I did was with ketogluconate. We did temperature effects, and there's quite a big difference. And of course, that portends the mechanism as well, because if you know how adsorption is affected by temperature, you know if you're outer sphere or inner sphere retention pretty much. So.